The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
Attention, Galactic Collective. The Sci-Fi Geeks Club is next. Please stand by.
You can take part in the podcast by providing feedback. Send a message to galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Call the voicemail number at 805-328-3966 or leave an audio message directly on our website, galacticnetcasts.com. We also invite you to join the Galactic Collective. All the information and links can be found at gncasts.com/galacticcollective. That's gncasts.com/galacticcollective. Now, without further ado, hear ye, hear ye! Another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is officially called to order!
I'm Dave Nelson, and on this episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, joining me is Brad Ludwig, Anessa Moyens, Corey Scott from the Else Nerds Network, and rejoining us is the host of the Daily Tech News Show, current geek, Cord Killers, Sword and Laser podcasts. He's also an author. He's the author of several books, including Citadel 32, United Moon Colonies, Lot Beta, Events of a Different Nature, and Chronology of Tech History. Welcome back to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Mr. Tom Merritt.
Ooh, thanks for having me back. I'm glad I didn't spoil it last week.
You were this close, Tom. You were this close for not coming back.
It's okay. Your inexperience is fine. We'll just walk you through it.
Yeah. I appreciate you overlooking that, Corey.
Yeah, you've never. I know that you're new to this whole podcast thing, so we'll
you
be.
You guys are very welcoming. Makes me feel comfortable.
We'll be gentle. All right, so this is our discussion topic edition of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, and I thought since you have written two books, United Moon Colonies, and is it Lot Beta? Is the other one that's based on the moon, right?
No, it's Citadel 32.
Oh, Citadel. Sorry, Citadel 30. That's the new one, right?
Yeah. It's part half of it. One half of the book is based on the moon. The other half is down on Earth.
Okay, so since
there's an apocalypse involved,
do you want to just run down real quick the synopsis of that one?
Yeah, sure. Well, Citadel 32 is the first book I've read that I actually think you might not hate. So I'm actively promoting it. Lot Beta wasn't bad either. But the idea is that there's a base on the moon that was cut off from the Earth when society fell apart. And they've been surviving on their own, like basically scraping by, conserving resources, but still technologically advanced. And down on Earth, everything fell apart. So they've been thrown back technologically. And the moon is trying to figure out how to contact the Earth again and whether there's anyone down there to listen and vice versa. So it takes place in those two perspectives as one character kind of makes an important discovery up on the moon base, and then down on Earth, another character who's a monk of the Citadel makes an important discovery without really realizing it at first. And then the rest is the story.
Where can people find that book, by the way?
Yeah.
TomMerrittBooks.com is my website that has all my books, and that one is up there. And you can search for it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, places like that as well. It's also Kindle, iBooks, etc.
Okay, so let's talk about some moon movies in the theme of the whole moon thing. And I kind of put together a list of famous or not-so-famous moon movies. And let's just run through them and just tell me if you've seen it, what your thoughts are on it, and so on. So the first one is Moon. And it looks like I have seen it, Tom has seen it, and Brad has seen it. I could have swore, Anessa, that you saw this and you talked about this on a previous episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club.
I've been told that I should watch Moon.
Okay.
But I think whenever I was going to actually watch Moon, it was no longer on Netflix.
That's exactly what happened to me.
Because they're like, you should totally watch Moon. I'm like, awesome, great, add it to my queue. And then one Saturday, I'm like, all right, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to watch Moon. And then Moon was nowhere to be found.
That was like,
I own it in the collection.
What don't you own?
It was a new
Brad.
Moon.
What movie do you own?
Citizen Kane.
That's true. I do not own Citizen Kane.
Okay.
Thankfully, Anessa has moved in, and now I have.
And now he has a copy of Citizen Kane.
I'm set.
Okay, so
the circle is complete.
I know. 12 Angry Men and Citizen Kane. That's what I brought to the relationship.
Boom.
That's good enough. So, Brad, do you want to? Nothing else is. You don't need anything else. Just Citizen Kane. That's all you need. Brad, do you want to run down just kind of the synopsis of the movie Moon?
Yeah. Excuse me. From IMDb here, Sam Bell has a 3-year contract to work for Lunar Industries. For the contract's entire duration, he is the sole employee based on their lunar station. His primary job responsibility is to harvest and periodically rocket back to Earth supplies of helium-3. There is no direct contact link available between the lunar station and Earth, so his only direct real-time interaction is with Gertie, the intelligent computer whose function is to attend to his daily day-to-day needs. With such little human contact and all of it indirect, he feels that 3 years is far too long to be so isolated. He knows he is beginning to hallucinate as the end of his 3 years approaches. All he wants to do is return to Earth and be with his wife Tess and their infant daughter Eve. With 2 weeks to go, he gets into an accident at one of the mechanical harvesters and is rendered unconscious. And at that point, wackiness ensues.
I love this movie for the fact that you don't really know what's real at times. Like, what's real, what isn't real, you know? And
yeah.
And they did a lot.
It had a really... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, they did a lot with only having one character. Like, his interactions were very limited, right?
Yeah. It was... most of it is the contact between him and Gertie. The contact that he has with Earth seems to have issues with the... There's an antenna issue, supposedly. And it really felt very Philip K. Dick-esque, you know? What is real? That was always a theme in his work, and you really get that feel from this. And Sam Rockwell, I mean, after seeing this movie, to me, there is no wrong in the world that Sam Rockwell can do, because the way he plays this character and the other things that happen, I really don't want to spoil any of this because it is such
hard,
a...
Isn't it? Yeah.
It is, because it's so spectacular, and some of the things that make it so good, if you mention it, It gives away a part of the film, and you really don't want to do it because it's something that has the most impact the first time you see it, and the second time you see it, it kind of fills in maybe some of the things you might have missed or other clues as to things that were going on that gave you – had you known what you now know, seeing it after the first time, then you go, oh, yeah, okay, I can see that here now. And Kevin Spacey doing the voice of Gertie.
I forgot.
Especially now that if we've all watched House of Cards, I want to go back and watch Gertie with that.
Somebody needs to make a dub of Moon, a mashup, yep, using his character from House of Cards to do, awesome, you know, to speak as Gertie.
Because he's got problems contacting her.
That'd be so awesome. I would love to see that. Yeah, you're right.
I would. Yes. So I stumbled across this at a DVD place, you know, at one of those rental places, and they were selling a bunch of videos, and I saw this and I went, huh, well, it's $3. What the heck? And it's the best damn investment I have ever made in a movie in my life, because I love that movie so much.
It was very low key. I mean, there wasn't a lot of hype around it when it came out. It was one of those movies where people just kind of discovered it.
Yeah. My wife took me to see it in Concord, California. It kind of just this weird thing because it was in a theater we didn't live anywhere near, and she had heard that it was good, and it was kind of playing in the smallest theater in this smallest complex in the Bay Area, and so I didn't even know what to expect going in. I hadn't heard a thing about it, which I almost wish we could undo everything we've said so far, because that was a really fun way to see this movie. But if you need convincing, I think your Philip K. Dick analogy is great, because that is the kind of thing that if you know Philip K. Dick, that's all you need to know. And it's not going to spoil anything, but you know what kind of thing you're getting yourself into.
Yeah.
This movie also launched the career. I don't know if it launched, but it gave him more prominence What's his name, the director? He's David Bowie's son, right?
Was it Davy Jones? David Jones?
Yeah, David Jones.
That sounds right.
No,
yeah.
No.
He's doing the Warcraft movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, Duncan Jones.
Duncan Jones. Sorry, that's why it was sounding wrong.
I think it's
David Jones is actually David Bowie's name.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But Duncan Jones is his son, yeah.
All right, let's move on from a very recent movie to a really, really old movie, and that's A Trip to the Moon. And Anessa, do you want to describe the kind of the quick plot synopsis of this one?
Well, a group of men travel to the moon by being shot in a capsule from a giant cannon. And they are captured by moon men, and then they escape, and they return to Earth.
Well, do you want to describe when did this come out, Anessa?
I don't remember. It was in the, was it 1920s?
Back in 1902.
It's a silent flick.
1902. Yeah. It's like one of the earliest movies. Yeah. Like, you always see that once.
It is 1902.
You always see that one scene.
Uh-oh.
When they're being shot. What are you uh-ohing?
Yeah, the one where the rocket hits the moon in the eye.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching this movie, and I couldn't help but think about The Mighty Boosh and how Noel Fielding basically puts whipped cream all over his face, and he's the moon, and he's up in space, and he's, well, space being, you know, like the backdrop of space, and he's talking, and, you know, I really wonder if this is where they got the idea from, because there is a face on the moon. Like you said, the people are shot in a cannon, the cannon lands in the eye of the moon. But it does kind of have a vibe where, you know, they just kind of slapped some whipped cream or shaving cream or something on the face and then kind of texturized it and called it a day.
Would have taken home an Oscar for special effects, except there were no such thing as Oscars.
Yeah. Gosh. I really have to think about the movie, but, you know, there's these people they're talking about going up to the moon, and you've got like all these professors and whatnot standing around, and they decide that's what they're going to do, and they go up there, and I don't recall it being an incredibly long movie.
No, I don't think it is.
I'm really bad with movies in that I will watch them. Yeah, it was
really
me. I was like, I don't remember it being very long, maybe like 15, 20 minutes or so. But, and honestly, I'm really bad with movies just because I feel like I end up watching a lot of media or reading and whatnot. And at the end of the day, I don't really have that much room to store everything. And so I just remember whether or not I like it, and then out of the brain it goes. So asking me details on movies, like I didn't even remember watching one of the other movies down on the list. And we watched it for an episode of the Sci-Fi Film School, and my brain was already done with it. Like, sure, I watched the movie, I kicked Matt's butt on the quiz, but at the end of the day, once I'm done with the movie, I'm typically done with it.
Well,
there's not a whole lot of movies that really stick with me with great detail.
Anessa, I can understand you forgetting that one, because it was a terrible, terrible, terrible movie. It's called The Dark Side of the Moon. It's I wouldn't recommend anybody watch it. We had another podcast called The Sci-Fi Film School at one time. And basically, it was kind of a film sacky thing where we watched a movie and we laughed and joked and made fun of it and did kind of a quiz at the end. And that's what she was talking about. So,
gotcha.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but is A Trip to the Moon, is that a French film? I believe.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It is a French flick.
Le Voyage dans la Lune. You can find it on archive.org. If you look for it under the French name, they have a black and white copy of it for free.
Also, you can look for the unauthorized remake, Excursion to the Moon, which came out in 1908.
There you go.
Rip off.
Man,
they were doing
Hollywood and these redoing all the classic films.
The dark reimagining of Trip to the Moon?
Yeah. Zack Snyder was the director on that one. All right, let's move on to the next one. And I know for a fact that Anessa was a big fan of this one, Iron Sky. And so was Brad saw it and Corey saw it.
Yes.
So Corey, hey Corey, do you want to, since you haven't described a movie yet, do you want to kind of run down the plot of this one?
Yeah, I watched this in anticipation of this show. I kind of felt like you were mad at me for putting this on the list.
Why?
Having watched it. So the description is, in the last moments of World War II, a secret Nazi space program evaded destruction by fleeing to the dark side of the moon. During 70 years of utter secrecy, the Nazis construct a giant space fortress with a massive armada of flying saucers. That does not describe the movie even close to how insane this flick is. I couldn't fathom what was going on half the time. It starts out with a couple of men from NASA, essentially, walking on the moon. They just landed, and
he
one
was
of
just
them's
out
a
there
model.
For publicity. Yeah. And he's like, hey, I'm on the moon. Great publicity. And you have a president that looks like Sarah Palin, because she's a maverick.
Totally playing off of Sarah Palin as the president. And then her go-to publicist is essentially just becomes insane because she falls in love with one of the head Nazi guys. And just I can't tell you about this film. What was terrible, besides watching it, was being forced to watch it because they kept going into German a lot of the time, and it's not like one of those things where they speak German for a little bit and give you some subtitles and then they go, we'll just talk English now. They did that, but then they go back to speaking German again, and so I couldn't just look down at my phone and play Angry Birds or something while I'm watching it. I had to keep actively watching the movie.
I didn't think that was a problem.
Oh, it was.
I don't know. I like watching movies with subtitles, so maybe I'm just.
I don't have a problem watching movies with subtitles if they're a good movie.
If this it's English, I'm just going to read the words. Brad gave me this look like, really? Because I don't like watching like just TV shows or movies that are in English with closed captioning, because I will sit there and I will focus on the words.
No.
But if it's in a language not English, I don't really seem to have that big of an issue. If it's a movie in Spanish, I'll still watch it with subtitles, but then I'll sit there and go, that's not what they said. So, because I understand just enough to know what they say, but sometimes I don't always catch everything.
I do that. Speak a little bit of Russian. I do that when I watch the Americans and they're speaking in Russian, and I'm always like, that's an interesting way of translating that.
Yeah, it's like, well, I guess they get what they need to say out of it, but that's not what was said. It works for the story, though.
If the subtitles are actually what was in the script and the actors were ad-libbing or something.
Well, I think it's kind of like the when they're signers for the hearing impaired, because I think there is some interpretation that goes into that. Because I saw that video of that guy, I think it was like in New York, like for the New York City governor, and he was doing all these crazy like variations of...
Oh, well, he was supposedly off his meds, so...
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Wasn't that the guy that was in New York? No, he was in a different country.
Oh, that... Okay.
Yeah, he was over by like Nelson Mandela or something. No, because the thing with sign language is, especially for ASL, there's not a standardized dictionary for ASL.
Oh, okay.
So you can go from Texas to New York and have one word have two different signs, but if you're not from that area, then it might be a little different. So there's a difference in dialect with ASL. Plus, if you have a long sentence, you might have fewer signs or some signs. Like, I'm trying to think. I think it's, will we ever? So you have this big circle, and then you go into a Y, and you bring it up. And so just the word ever has a lot to it.
Hmm.
So some words have, you know, like a really easy short sign. So, you know, like if or judging, then it's short. But then it just kind of depends on...
The other thing is there's no proper sentence structure like how we speak.
Right.
There is, you don't add an L-Y to a word.
You can. There's three different forms of sign language.
Let me tell you. Watching people that like are deaf watch that, they think it's insanity because it's a waste of time.
There's ASL, which is very condensed. So if you have a long sentence, they'll sign just enough so you understand the concept of what you're talking about. Then you have pidgin, and then you have English. English will sit there and you will sign the word, and then you will sign ing. So like you're running. And then pidgin is somewhere in the middle. And so for for example, I'm going to face the camera here. So for Room, with ASL, you have your two hands parallel to each other. So they move from one way, and then they move the other way. So you make like a box shape. With Pigeon, you make R's, and then you do that. That's a room. But this would be room, box, whatever. So it's
also
there's Vogue. A lot to it. and Vogue, yeah. It kind of looks like the Vogue thing going on. But it's just really interesting, and what I learned was somewhere in between the two. So I learned, I've learned some Pigeon sign language, and it's a mesh between English and ASL. So I never really truly learned ASL. So if I'm signing, I tend to be wordy in the ASL word world.
Okay. All right. That's interesting.
I'm really wordy.
That's why Iron Sky is a terrible movie.
Yes. Thank you.
All right,
let's go from a silly movie to a pretty serious movie. 2001: A Space Odyssey. We've all seen this. Nessa's name's not next to this. I'm surprised that you haven't seen this, Nessa. It's a sci-fi staple. What's wrong with you?
There's a lot out there.
There is a lot out there. Who wants to tackle this
and
one?
I spent a lot of time working and going to school, so didn't always have a lot of time to watch stuff.
Okay, I'll give that. I'll give it to you. Tom, do you
tell
want to
us about 2001?
Well, it all starts a long time ago when a monkey and a bone loved each other very much. And then flash forward to Gary Lockwood flying in an alternate universe, apparently, because Pan Am's still around, and he gets assigned to investigate something on the moon. Turns out there's a monolith up there, and somehow it points to Jupiter, so they go to explore it. And a crazy computer that was invented at the University of Illinois tries to take them over and kill them all. They defeat it, but not before they get sucked into the monolith and see a baby.
Wow.
Space baby.
That was the best description of that movie I've ever heard in my life. That was awesome, Tom.
See, and that's what Kubrick needed in this film, editing.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, there's also a lot of classical music and spinning things.
And yes. And what, the first
it's five... It's really good, though. I love 2001 as based on.
The first 5 minutes is just a blank screen and music, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Oh, right, because you see the bone floating through space, and then it turns into the... satellite,
yeah,
or something.
So how does
that, how it opens?
How does the moon? How do the moon? Since we're on the subject of moon movies, how does the moon scenes in 2001: Space Odyssey compare? Do you guys think to other moon movies and to reality? It's pretty spot on for a movie that was made in 1969. Don't you guys think?
Totally. Yeah, I mean everybody talks about Star Wars effects, but 2001 was what George Lucas was hoping to achieve. And he did his effects for Star Wars because it was considered the standard at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty trippy too, man.
No, it's visually stunning, but you know, what Kubrick does with his shots and with timing and everything is to give you that sense of the vastness of space, you know, and to try to give you a visual representation of the concepts he's trying to put out. And for somebody that might not really twig to that, it can seem very horribly long in spots. So,
I recently
also HAL is just a perfect example of why we should be afraid of the Internet of Things.
I used to do foreign language lessons in the basement of the foreign language building at the University of Illinois, where the computer that HAL was based on still ran at the time.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow. It's
pretty creepy. Because you were doing the foreign language things on the terminal that was connecting to this computer that you're like, you were based on the HAL. Okay.
Worried that you'd all of a sudden
hear... I can't do that, Tom.
Hear the computer start singing Daisy.
That is not the correct tense, Tom.
I recently watched... what's the Matthew McConaughey movie? The new
Interstellar.
Interstellar. And that had a lot of 2001 Space Odyssey in it. A lot of inspiration from that movie went into Interstellar. I was really, but not like it wasn't too long, like the scenes weren't too long, like it wasn't the whole Kubrick, it was the partial Kubrick, which I really appreciated.
The modern sensibility.
Yeah. All right. This
you
is,
never go full Kubrick.
No.
No, you never.
No, you never want to, really. You know, it's kind of like the full Monty.
It's against the law.
Yeah.
It sounds vaguely dirty.
All right, so this next one is Destination Moon, and I had never seen it till today. I was able to watch it for free on dailymotion.com. Remember that website? You guys ever use Daily Motion to watch things on?
Mm-hmm. I think I might have seen a video on there at some point, but that was a long time ago.
You'll find things on Daily Motion that you will not find on YouTube. There are some full movies and full TV shows on Daily Motion. I don't know how they... Well, I'm sure it's not as patrolled as YouTube is. You can't find everything, but I found Destination Moon. It's a 1950 movie, and it was like the first movie that really tackled spaceflight and what it would be like for a rocket ship or a spaceship to go to the moon. Like, they handled like gravity really well and like how the ship would actually get to the moon. Like, it would have to slow down and let the moon's gravity grab it. And they handled just not exactly like it's still got that hokiness, like that 1950s hokiness, like, let's go on a moon trip, let's get in right now and go, because like there was like two guys,
make some sandwiches.
Yeah, it was like this whole big outing, you know? It's a grand adventure into space, into, you know, to the moon. But they did handle, like, the technical parts of it. And I think it was ahead of its time, definitely. And for a 1950 movie, it looked really, really good. Like, it held up, like, the look of the film. Like, I think they put a lot into the special effects for that time, so it still did look really, really good. Because you can watch a 1960s movie and it will look terrible because it's a lower budget film. I think this movie actually had a higher budget. And that's my review of Destination Moon. You guys can check it out on Daily Motion. The rest of these movies are pretty much nobody has seen. I watched a bit of First Men in the Moon. It's based on an H.G. Wells story. It was interesting. Didn't watch the whole thing, though. Moon 02, Moon Trap, which starred, let's see, Walter Koenig, and what's his face? Hang on.
Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell. 1990s, Brad? Do you know?
1989.
So you might want to think about that, yep, for your moon watching pleasure. Project Moonbase is another one, and we also mentioned The Dark Side of the Moon. That was a early 1990s film that Anessa and I will not recommend. Let's jump into Corey's addition to the list. Moonbase. What's that one all about, Corey?
Well, I added it to the list because I was looking for all the different films you had listed on Netflix and through Can I Stream It, and I got this other movie called Moonbase. It makes, what was the film from earlier, Iron Sky?
Yeah.
It basically makes Iron Sky look like the Avengers. It was it's a hokey, terrible, terrible movie. There's something underneath that's there. First of all, the only person I recognized from it was Kurt Fuller, who is perfectly smarmy and funny in it. It seems like everybody else was actually from other things. There's someone named Samantha Phillips who played Gorgeous Woman. That was her role. And her role was pivotal to the entire film. It hinged upon her.
And yet she didn't have a name?
It's basically...
She didn't have a character name?
No, no name.
That's funny.
Just, you have to watch the film. It's basically a bunch of criminals that are they're in an off-planetary prison. They escape. They escape in a garbage thing to the moon where the garbage is being recycled. Like, the people on the moon are human versions of Wally. And they're cleaning through the junk and stuff to recycle it and then send it down to Earth. And then they kidnap the people there to try to get away. And it's one of those typical, everybody's just kind of going through, oh, we've got to get away from them, people keep dying, that kind of 80s action flick. Except this happened in the mid-90s. I kept thinking this was from 1986. No, it's not. It's from 1997.
Wow.
So I don't know how they managed to achieve making it look that bad.
Overall,
lots of effort.
I, if you're really bored and you like these kinds of silly films, it's right up there with everything else. I like dumb movies sometimes, but it's don't think you're getting any kind of fantastic flick here. It's a dumb prisoners in space escape film.
Okay. Thanks for the warning. We really appreciate that. You've done your part today, Corey. Appreciate it.
I watched it so you don't have
to. Yes, yes.
Thank you, Corey, for your service.
For King and Country.
Project Moonbase, by the way, I mentioned that briefly. You can watch that on an episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Just throwing that out there.
Oh, that's so much better.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
And have you guys been seeing Other Space on Yahoo?
No.
Not yet.
No.
Heard of it.
So it's got Joel and I can't remember the other actor's name, but two
Trace
from MST3K. Yeah, Trace. It is dumb, but there's something there that makes it may even just be the nostalgia portion of it, but I've gotten through the first two episodes. Yahoo, for some reason, kept scrambling as I was watching the first two episodes. It would get almost a little past halfway on the first episode, and the second one would start like right away. It just sort of scramble out on my Roku, so I'm going to try it on another device soon.
But is it, yes. I mean, you say it's dumb, but is it worth the watch? Like, is it fun?
It's dumb comedy. Okay. It's a low budget comedic space group of people. Guy gets his own ship, and his sister, who's obviously much better suited, becomes the second in command. And then his babysitter as a kid is his third in command, and they're both like, why are we subservient to this guy? And then he hires the girl that he's got a huge crush on that has no interest in him as the navigator for the ship. And it's silly, but it's got some great people in it. It's worth a watch, definitely. And it's nice to see Yahoo getting more content when I'm watching the weekly episodes of Community to see these other things popping up there that are also able to be viewed. Because that was the question, is what was going to be the end game if we just all go over there for Community and then leave?
Mm-hmm. So Community was the carrot, and now they have to provide the rest of the meal, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So before we get out of here, honorable TV mention, Space 1999. It wouldn't be a conversation about the moon without mentioning that at least once. Are we all fans of that? Have we all seen Space 1999, you guys?
No.
Nope.
Wow.
Used to have it on VHS.
Nice.
I grew up.
Gotta watch it.
That was an inspiration of mine. I remember like playing Space 1999. You know how when you're a kid you watch something, you want to play it, like kind of do your own version of it? I did my own version of Space 1999, and it was awesome. So.
There you go.
Yeah.
It would be great if you had a camera and you did things like the kid on the Goldbergs and videotaped yourself making those things.
Yeah, that was before.
I've got a huge nostalgic kickback from that now.
Yeah, that was before the camcorder, unfortunately. So yeah, I think you can watch a lot of the episodes of Space 1999 on Hulu, if I'm not mistaken, I believe.
Cool.
All right, that's your moon movies, and that does it for this episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Tom Merritt, again, awesome having you on as a guest this week. Where can people find, or where do you want to direct people online to your stuff?
Well, yeah, thank you guys for having me. This is a lot of fun playing in the clubhouse, talking about geeky movies. I really enjoyed it. And if people are interested in my book about the moon or otherwise, TomMerrittBooks.com.
Also the book about your dogs.
And yeah. There's a book about my dogs.
Yeah. Django and what's the other dogs?
Sawyer.
Sawyer. Okay.
Django Fett and Sawyer from Lost are the inspirations for those dogs.
I feel a little guilty, but while we were doing the show, I actually picked up Citadel 32.
Oh, well, thank you. Don't feel guilty. That's awesome.
Well, I should have been paying more attention to the show.
No.
I just took a quick break.
This is why
I pulled it up and then I was going to... It said, like, buy as a gift. I'm like, I'm going to wait because I have a feeling someone's going to buy it.
Cool. All right.
Yeah, I was watching Moonbase for a while, so, I'm, you know, it's cool.
This is why you have so many people on the podcast. You can just take a break and check out for a while and then come back in again and you'll be fine. It's cool. Completely cool. All right. I'm Dave Nelson on behalf of Brad, Anessa, Corey, Matt, and Tom. We will talk to you guys next time.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Tom.
Bye, Dad.
Thank you for joining us for another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Did you know you could help support this network financially for as little as $1 a month? Come on, that's less than a cup of coffee. Support this network now at patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. If you liked what you heard, then make sure to subscribe for free on iTunes, Stitcher, or by going to gncasts.com/subscribe. And if you really enjoyed the podcast, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Even better, tell your friends and family about the Sci-Fi Geeks Club from Galactic Netcasts. Who knew? A brief collection of gossip, news, and rumors transcending space and time. Now, the Doctor Who Series 9 will kick off with one of its darkest plots ever as Peter Capaldi's Time Lord ponders whether to murder a child. That child is Davros! Yeah, I've said it! Didn't even warn you! Yeah, no spoilers here. I don't believe this article to be true, Womit. This is a rehash of a rehash of a rehash. Seriously, I am shaking my head. Now, of course, I think it's time we have another companion on the TARDIS. Don't you? Apparently Den of Geek do too. They've listed a few people who they'd like to see. Maisie Williams, Shona McCulloch, Faye Marisay. It's fair to say that a few people want to see more people in the control room. Now, how about some Disney Who? I mean Dr. Disney. I mean Disney XD will be showing 10's Adventures in the US. 10's Adventures, one of the finer points of the new series. Pics of Jenna Coleman once again have been seen, and she's wandering around London during a filming day. I mean, gallivanting around London when the film crew are hundreds of miles away. Has Gemma actually done any filming? We haven't seen Jenna on set for 6 weeks. Lots of appearances of Peter. And also, Arian Baker has tweeted, hashtag Doctor Who, what a blast! Thank you, Peter Capaldi, Maisie Williams and the whole team. Gonna miss it. Grrr. No mention of Jenna. Remember I told you about the film they would never make? Well, apparently, according to the leaked emails from Sony Pictures, they were waiting to make one. Who knew? Is Doctor Who the most referenced show in other shows? The Radio Times seems to think it is. I always thought that was Star Trek. Do you know why Chris Eccleston left Doctor Who? Apparently, he'd had enough. He wanted to do it his way. Well, the Daily Record has more of that article. Personally, I miss you, Chris. There are only 4 episodes of Series 9 without a confirmed writer. 7, 8, 9 and 10. It's looking to be a good series so far. Hopefully, we'll get some proper spoilery information to you soon. Speaking of spoilery information, there's an article on Blog to Who who tells you who actor David Schofield's been cast as. It's described as a period adventure, and it also stars the comedian Rufus Hand. I'm not going to tell you here. It's far too spoilery! Don't forget to check Den of Geek for the roundup, according to them. And also, why not have a look at the Sergeant Pepper homage and see if you can name all the characters. This minisode was brought to you by Imperial Steam Files. You can find me on Twitter at Imperial Gnome. You can email me imperialgnome@gmail.com, or you can find my website www.imperialsteam.com. That's all this week.
You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.galacticnetcasts.com.